Please help me to welcome our speaker tonight, Bill Kay from Ambler.
What's up, guys? My name is Bill. I'm an alcoholic. Appreciate the home group having me out. It's an honor to be asked to speak. A little nervous. Haven't spoken in a few years outside of a jail setting. But let's kick it off. So I am an alcoholic. I identify as an alcoholic. For one primary reason, when I take a drink, I am never going to be able to tell how many I'm going to have. And when I start, I never know when I'm going to stop. And when I stop, I can't stay stopped. For me, sobriety sucks. I hate being sober, absent any sort of solution in my life. I've had multiple treatment episodes, multiple arrests, multiple times where my life's completely fallen apart at the seams, and for none of those reasons do I identify as an alcoholic. I identify as an alcoholic because I'm chronically discontent. You can take away the alcohol and I'll still be discontent. I'm still looking for something to take me outside of myself, and I can never seem to find what I'm looking for. Through the grace of God, AA, you guys, and other groups like this, I have a beautiful life today. To qualify myself, I do have a sobriety date. It's July 29th, 2016. This isn't my first rodeo. My original sobriety date was May 24th, 2012, and backing into this a little bit, I'll tell you how I got here. So I grew up in a middle-class family, never really needed for anything, got most of what I wanted. I had a loving mother, a loving father, and a brother and sister who looked up to me, younger brother and sister who looked up to me. And, as a child, I don't remember standing out or feeling odd or different or anything. I had friends when I was younger, played sports. And I remember, right around the time when I was like maybe 13, 14, I started drinking for the first time and, started to feel a little bit different. I really liked the feeling. As soon as I had my first drink, I really, really liked it. It no longer made me feel, it made me feel very much connected to everybody around me. All the little fears and insecurities that I had going about daily life, whether it be, making new friends, showing up to an appointment, talking to a girl, anything, alcohol solves all of that, and it was awesome. I remember one of the first times drinking I can remember, I was probably 15 or 16 years old. I was working at a Perkins down in Warminster, and a bunch of older kids that worked at the restaurant were having a party at a house one night, and I was there till probably like 2 or 3 in the morning. I remember this girl that I wanted to hooked up with another guy. I puked all over myself, but I did have a few moments of feeling like very much connected to everybody at the party, and I thought I was the man. And I remember like being 16 years old, and I called my mom, and it was the first time I think she probably saw me like visibly intoxicated with puke all over me. If anybody's familiar with the movie Old School, when Frank gets picked up naked by his wife, it was like that, but I wasn't naked, and it was my mom rather than my wife. But it was embarrassing nonetheless. But like, I remember the next day waking up feeling like I got to do that again because that was awesome. And everybody else at the party seemed to be drinking, enjoying themselves, but not puking all over themselves, not making an ass out of themselves, and they seemed to be able to keep it together. Again, I thought maybe I was cool for pushing it to the limit or something like that. So that continued. I drank socially for a while, and eventually drinking progressed. And I wasn't able to afford my drinking habit through normal means, so I decided, I'm going to start selling narcotics. And that was when I was 17, 18. And that became very much a part of my identity, too, because I don't know if anybody in here can relate to this, but it's very rare that I ever felt like even keel with everybody in the room. I either felt like way below you guys or way above you guys. I had to be either like a piece of crap or the crap, And it was very rare that I just walked into a room and felt content, like we were all equals. But today, I do find that that's when I have my most blissful, serene moments, is when I feel on the same playing field as everybody else. So anyhow, even back then, I was an active alcoholic addict, and engaged in the type of behavior that an alcoholic and an addict would engage in. But even then, I saw myself as different, oftentimes better than. You know, I saw friends of mine, breaking into people's houses, in high school. And as I got into my 20s, I saw people breaking into people's houses, stealing stuff. And I wasn't doing any of that. I was better because I was just, I was just selling something to feed my own habit. And, I was better than those guys. I would be using more or drinking more than the guys who were coming to buy from me. But, I'd look at them like they had a problem, but I had it all figured out. And so 19 years old, I was arrested for the first time. And I don't come from a family where it's okay to get arrested. It's not by any means an okay, acceptable thing in my family. And, I'll never forget, I was arrested, and it was for something stupid. And I looked my dad in the eyes, and I meant it with all my heart. Like, I really never wanted to let my parents down. That was always a big deal to me, not letting my parents down, not being a bad example for my younger brother or sister. And I looked at my dad square in the eyes, and I meant it with everything in me. This will never happen again. I'm going to stop. I'm done. And I meant it. I would have passed the lie detector test. But, as you might imagine, that wasn't the end for me. Over the next 4 or 5 years, things got really, really bad. I lived every single day in a state of complete hopelessness, complete godlessness, worshiping this thinking mind that runs every single waking moment of my day, tells me I don't have enough, I need to do this, I need to get more, and all I'm living for is to get the next drink. My alcoholism, my disease can find numerous solutions. I can find it in drugs. I can find it in alcohol. I can find it in women. I can find it in money. I can find it in career achievements. I can find it in anything. All selfish in nature, all these selfish, self-centered things, which I had no idea. I had no idea about alcoholism. I had no idea about AA, anything like that. So for a while, things were really good. I didn't have any consequences. Then the consequences came, and I just couldn't get it. I just wanted to die. I mean, the last couple years of drinking, every single day, I had hoped that I would die, because dying would be much favorable to what I saw as the alternative, which was, if I ever did get sober, I'd live a miserable existence, it would suck, I would never laugh again, I'd never have fun again, I'd lose every piece of my identity that I thought was cool or worthwhile, especially being a young guy when faced with this prospect of getting sober. I just didn't see a way out. I really didn't. I didn't know anybody who was doing it successfully. So, I don't know. The only friends I had were the ones who either had passed away or the ones who were still out there drinking with me. I didn't know anything about recovery at all. May 24th, 2012, my alcoholism kind of reached one of its bottoms. Again, I had been living the last couple years in a state of constant misery and depression, not knowing what was wrong with me, just thinking I had this, it was more than depression, it was more than anxiety, it was more than just generalized fear. It invaded every single cell of my body, this disease. And the only thing that took it away was alcohol. The only thing, when I describe it to people, I felt like every single day of my life, I was living outdoors in the middle of February with no clothes on. It's naked. I'm naked. The world's gray. It's cold. Nobody's friendly. And I'm just feeling cold and alone. And when I put that drink in me, it feels like I go into my warm house, close the door behind me, fall back on it, and just everything's okay. And that feeling, I would do anything for. Anything. there was nothing I wouldn't do for that feeling of being okay. In contrast to how I lived without alcohol, I would do anything for that escape, for that sensation of relief that I got from the drink. So again, giving that up, giving that one thing up that made me feel like I had a life worth living, out of the question. No way. I went to a couple different outpatient treatment centers. Nothing ever stuck. I felt like I was different than the people in there. You know, I'd hear some crazy stories and I, you know, would separate myself from everyone else in there. I never did any of that, never did this, blah, blah, blah. You know, I wasn't ready to surrender. I wasn't ready to give up my own ideas. And it wasn't for, you know, it wasn't for a lack of trying. I mean, from the ages of 21 to 24, I tried stopping on my own a couple hundred times. And every time I'd wind up in my basement crying, shivering, on the ground, nobody around, wanting to kill myself, but being too much of a coward to do so, and eventually giving in, whether it was days, hours, weeks, maybe a month. I just couldn't handle life sober, and I didn't know there was any relief out there other than in the drink. So they say God shows up in our lives in mysterious ways. Sometimes that might be in the form of a friend, sometimes it might be in the form of a coworker, sometimes law enforcement. For me, it was the latter. So again, you know, numerous small arrests, embarrassed every time, disgracing my family, still can't stop, want to stop so bad, but I can't. Eventually, May 24, 2012, I find myself caught up in a sting with the DEA and the Bucks County Opioid Task Force in Bucks County, and I made a purchase off of a gentleman, and I started to pull away, and I found myself getting blocked off by two unmarked SUVs, and a bunch of agents jumped out with AK-47s or AR-15s pointed at my head, screaming profanities at me, and I almost crapped my pants. I was so scared. You know, I'd love to tell you I was super cool and collected, but I was so scared. You know, just what you see is what you get. I'm not built for jail. You know, I'm not tough, although I thought I was at the time. You know, I was petrified. And, you know, so I was taken into custody. I went to a holding cell. I sat there for what felt like, you know, days. It was like a few hours. And I got transferred over to the county jail. And it was probably almost 2 days before I got a phone call. So I was able to finally call my dad, who I was living with at the time. And I was actually working for his company at the time, too. So in his mind, his son never came home one night. He suspected, he didn't know for sure, but suspected his son had something wrong with him, but didn't know what it was. And all of a sudden, I don't show up at work. I'm not home for almost 2 days. He's calling all around, driving all around, doesn't know where I am. And finally, he gets this call from me, and I'm alive. And I remember calling him, and it was a big dose of humility. And, you know, he said to me something that I'll never forget. He said, you know, and he was right. I mean, he's, again, I can't stress enough. I've had a lot of opportunities in my life. I've graduated college. I haven't really needed for too much in my life. I've been given a lot of good opportunities. Sometimes I take advantage of them. Sometimes I totally blow them up. But he said to me, he said, Bill, you know, you have all this light around you, yet you continue to choose to gravitate towards the dark. And for the life of me, I can't figure out why that is. And it was such like a, it might sound silly, but to me, it was like a very profound question that kind of started my journey of, asking like, yeah, what is wrong with me? He's right. Like on one hand, I have like a really pretty surefire, successful path that I could take, and I could be a normal, productive, seemingly happy member of society. Yet I choose to drink myself into oblivion and deal drugs and end up in jail and in all these situations where I continually just spit in the face of every opportunity I've ever had. And I don't want to. I mean, like I have a good heart. I really want to do good. I do. I promise. but I can't figure it out. I keep going back. So I tell him, like, probably the first honest thing I had said to him in years when he asked me, like, why do you do that? I don't know, Dad. I don't know. I wish I had a good answer for you, but I'm not going to BS you. I don't know. So, you know, again, at the time, I would have probably characterized myself as some sort of lone wolf, tough drug dealer. What I actually was happening was my father started looking for a lawyer for me, paying for said lawyer, and figuring out a plan to get his son out of jail. Fortunately, that came to fruition after a few months. But just a little bit, you know, about that time in jail. I sat there, you know, going through a full-on detox. I'm shaking. I have, you know, liquid pouring out of every orifice in my body. At the same time, I don't feel well for 3 weeks. I didn't sleep for probably two. At one point, I'm slamming my head. I'm so out of my mind. I'm slamming my head against the concrete cell wall, hoping to knock myself out just for a little bit of sleep, just a little bit of relief from my reality. Unsuccessfully, by the way, just ended up with red marks on my face. And I remember at one point, 2 days in, it was probably like 5 in the morning, right before they do the first chow call for the day. And I'm laying in bed. I thought I might drift away to sleep for 2 minutes. And I had a cellmate who was this really old guy. He was an alcoholic as well. And he just farts really loud. And I was like, this is what rock bottom feels like. And, it was terrible. It was terrible. And yeah, I mean, at the time, I didn't know which way was up. I knew, you know, I got these motivational calls every couple of days that I would have with my dad. I'd have these conversations and he'd, and my dad's name is Bill too, so he'd pick up the phone. He'd be like, Junior, I just want you to know you're unemployable. And I was like, all right, you're right, Dad. Thank you. You know, and every couple of days we'd have these conversations where he would continue to build on the scope of how bad the problem was. And then it ended up being that my brother was wrapped up in the whole legal thing, and it was just a mess. And I was really, really scared when my lawyer came in, and he told me, he sat down with me in one of the meeting rooms, and he sat down, he looked me dead in the eye, and I thought finally, it took like a month and a half to get this guy in, and I thought finally, like, you know, what do we got? I thought, you know, we're finally got a plan here, let's do it, you know? And he looks at me and he says, Bill, we've got a real mess on our hands. And I was like, oh, no. I thought he was going to have all the answers. And he was like, yeah, so they have wiretaps of you and your brother. They had video surveillance of both of you. And not only did you get set up by one guy, but you got set up by two guys. So that's like what a clever criminal I was. It was ridiculous. So he starts working on getting me into a pre-trial intervention program where I do a drug and alcohol assessment with a counselor at the jail. And, you know, I was only in there for maybe 3 months. And those 3 months felt like a significant portion of my time because for anyone who's ever been, every second feels like an hour, if not more. There's just nothing to do. And just you just sit there and think and probably not thinking of anything good. I did get to a few AA meetings in there, and it was like the first time I maybe like picked up a little something that maybe I had the same thing that these guys had. But again, after a few months, I talked to that drug and alcohol counselor, and he told me, you are indeed, it sounds like you have a drug and alcohol problem. And to me, like, I don't know, I'd say like the extent of it internally felt like, great, now I have something to blame it on. This is why I behave the way I do. And I went to treatment straight out of jail. I got driven from the jail down to treatment in Bensalem. And, for the first time in my life, I finally was willing to do whatever. I finally admitted I was fresh out of ideas. I walked in, not literally, but metaphorically, with my hands up, completely ready to surrender and give whatever anybody told me who seemed half intelligent a shot. I was fresh out of my own ideas. I tried to hang on to my old friends, or maybe only drink and not do this. Maybe I'll just smoke a little weed. Maybe I'll sell drugs. I won't do drugs. I'll just drink. All these different things. And somebody at one point was like, yeah, good luck picking your recovery off the dollar menu. That's cool. And I was like, oh, shit. So I finally was ready to, like, give up that whole dollar menu idea and do whatever anybody told me. So I remember at this point, I'm 3 months sober going into treatment. And I felt good. I felt, like, physically I felt sober as a judge. I didn't know what to do, but I just shut up and I listened. And I had speakers come in from, other fellowships, from AA, who talked about this disease that they had. And I was really intrigued because what they described, like, some of them came from, just based on their story, some of them came from rough neighborhoods, some of them came from affluent neighborhoods, some middle of the road. They all looked different and had different stories, but some of the same feelings were universal throughout. And I identified with just about all of them. This generalized feeling of restlessness, this irritability, this discontentedness, never being okay, absent, a drink. And they talked about what they were doing, to combat this disease. And, some of them, again, had ended up in worse places than I had ended up. So I believed, like, what they were telling me. It was the first time that somebody seemingly was talking to me who had been where I had been, who felt the way I felt, and who was doing something about it and seemingly succeeding. So I listened up, and they told me, get a home group, get a sponsor, do 90 meetings in 90 days, get a commitment, and work the 12 steps. So, all right, like, I got out of treatment. And I did all of those things except work the 12 steps. I got out of treatment probably, towards the tail end of 2012. I joined another fellowship for a few years, and my life got a lot better. It really did. When you stop spending hundreds of dollars a day on alcohol and God knows what else, your life tends to get better. I became like a productive member of society. And internally, I got better to a degree as well. I made some new friends. Like, probably one of the best things that happened early on for me was my first day out of inpatient treatment. I met a friend and then another friend who ended up being pivotal in my recovery to this very day, who I count on on a daily basis. And that kind of was the beginning of building my network in recovery. That was a big thing for me. So I went to probably like 85 meetings in 90 days, those first 90 days. Everything was scary as hell. I felt like a newborn baby getting dropped off on the planet for the first time. Like, I did. I was so scared, like, to get my hand up and say, I'm Bill, and, at the time, I'm an addict, and let everybody know where I'm at and, show up to these new meetings where nobody knew me, and I just felt weird and separate and apart from. But no matter what, none of this stuff was as scary as going back to where I'd been. So I figured, whatever, I'll give it a shot. And over time, I felt like I was getting better. I started to get familiar with people in the rooms. I started to get, comfortable in my own skin to a degree. I did a lot of firsts. I went to new meetings. I got my hand up. I spoke. I got a sponsor and I took a commitment and, I never really worked the 12 steps, though. So what happened was this. Over the course of 3 years, again, externally, my life got a lot better. Within the first year, so when I came, just to back up one second, when I came out of treatment, I had nothing, absolutely nothing. I had a negative bank account balance, no friends, a family who was very, very angry and disappointed with me. No relationships to speak of, no car. I was a year away from getting my license. I didn't even have a cell phone. I didn't have cigarettes. I had debt out the wazoo. And anything else you could think of that might symbolize somebody living a productive life, I didn't have it. I didn't have any of it. And within a year, all those things came back. And it was cool. You know, it felt good, all those little things getting back in my life. Starting out with, like, having enough money to buy a pack of smokes, then getting a cell phone. And, you know, all these material things, they came into the picture. A car, my license back. I started to make some friends, started to mend relationships with my family. And it was cool. But then what happened was, I was introduced to this idea a couple years ago. I didn't know it at the time, but, you know, someone told me, whatever you think about the most during the day, that's your God. That's what you're worshiping. And at the time, a year into sobriety, I was worshiping my girlfriend and my career achievements. And what happened was I got a job in the field that I went to school for. I worked really, really hard. I then got a better job making more money. Then I got a better job making more money. Then I got a better job making more money. And I was making more money than I really pictured myself ever making, especially being in this odd position of being a convicted felon with a college degree. I didn't think I was ever going to have a decent job again. So I thought I was seizing the opportunity while it was here. And all I cared about was like what people at work thought of me and keeping my relationship with my girlfriend together. Eventually, they warned me what might happen, and it did indeed happen. I kind of like, they said it'll start happening in reverse. You'll stop working the steps. I never started, so I had a head start there. Then you'll stop talking to your sponsor. Check. You'll stop going to meetings. Check. You'll start lying to people in your network. Check. And then you'll relapse. Check. With like 3.5 years, again, I was in the other fellowship at the time. And, you know, with 3.5 years clean, as we called it over there, I ended up picking up. And everything was okay, seemingly, for a second. And then things went downhill really, really quick. And I experienced another bottom a couple months later. This one, I didn't lose too much materially. I didn't get arrested. There was no legal consequence. But what there was this. I was brought to my knees, and at such a low level in my own mind again, I had driven everybody in my life away from me. Nobody knew what was wrong with me. I was discontent as all hell. My life looked really good on the outside, but I was as miserable and depressed as I'd ever been, and again, having suicidal thoughts. And I'll never forget, like, I was trying to, you know, self-will myself back into sobriety again. And one of the things I was doing to manage this at the time was I figured I'll start running, and that'll get my endorphins up, and I'll feel really good. Well, I made it, like, 2 days on that track, and I remember in the middle of the daytime, in the middle of the week, it was probably like 11 a.m., I called my best friend, crying my eyes out, and spilled my guts to him, told him everything that had happened, because I lied about relapse at the time. Like, I kept everybody in the dark about it. People knew, like, something's off with Bill, but, you know, I couldn't let anybody know. I had to keep this image of myself going. So I called my friend, and I cried my eyes out, and I don't know what to do. I need help. I didn't really want to go to treatment. I didn't know what to do. But something had stuck in my head. During the time that I went out, my younger brother, he's 4 years younger than me. His name's Matt. Some of you guys know him. And he was a rough case. As rough as I was and as big of a mess as I was, my brother was twice as bad. And I was scared to death. The first couple years that I was clean, I was scared to death every single day that this kid was going to die. At the time, he was about 100 pounds soaking wet, and he was, you know, messing with the killer drug, heroin. And I was really, really scared because I love this kid with all my heart. He's my best friend. I would do anything for him, and I tried every approach I could. I tried to tough love him. I tried to love him. Like, nothing was working. I couldn't help him. He tried going to some meetings with me, wasn't getting it, whatever. He ended up getting in some trouble himself. He got sent down to a recovery house in Levittown. And neither one of us at the time had really tried AA. Again, I was in the other fellowship. But he called me one day, and he was at his wit's end. He was in the recovery house, maybe a month or two sober. Didn't know what to do, felt depressed, felt, you know, the classic signs of alcoholism, restless, irritable, discontent. And he calls me, and he says, I don't know what to do. I said, dude, if this fellowship's not working for you, why don't you give AA a shot? It can't hurt. And sure enough, he did. He gets his hand up first night, you know, talks about how he wants to kill himself and he needs help, and he's probably not going to have another try in him if he doesn't get it right now. And thank God, somebody showed up in his life, his now sponsor and a close friend of mine. Took him through the steps, and he wasn't buying in, but eventually he did. He, you know, I'll save that for him to tell, but he had a spiritual experience of sorts and bought into this thing wholeheartedly. And the reason why this is relevant is because my brother growing up was a complete knucklehead. Just, if you looked at him or talked to him, you would have thought, pretty low IQ kid, probably not going to have much of a future, but he's a good trier, you know? And he never really spoke too much. He was quiet. He walked with his head down. You know, between the two of us, we hung out a lot growing up, so I usually did the talking for both of us. And I just never really, like, had too much in the way of hopes for him to shoot to the moon on a life trajectory. But what happened was, after a few months of being in AA and getting involved in the steps, he called me one day, right when I was trying to come back, and it was the most bizarre sensation. It talks about it in the book. I don't know what page or what chapter. I'm not good with book quotes and stuff, but you know, there's this one part in the book where the guy sees his old friend and he says he can't bring himself to believe that he knows him or something like that. His foot grasps a new root or something to that effect. And do you know which one I'm talking about?
Yeah.
All right. and so that's how I felt. I didn't see him. I was on the phone with him, but that's how I felt audibly on the phone with him at that point in time. I expected to get a call from my knucklehead younger brother, and he'd mumble something to me and whatever. Instead, what I got was this lit up, super excited, articulate, well-spoken, and optimistic, God-centered individual on the other end of the line. And he's talking to me about God and service to others and the 12 steps. And he's talking about all this stuff that I didn't have any of it. I didn't have any of it, and he sounded so happy and so free. And all the things that I knew, we worried about together, and we had the same disease, and we had the same things that played over and over in our minds again. I knew we had the same thing, but he didn't have it anymore, or at least it wasn't controlling him. And again, when it comes to God, or the 12 steps, or service to others, completely foreign concepts to me. I had heard about, like, yeah, higher power, 12 steps, yeah. But I thought they were like cute ornaments on the tree. Like I didn't think they were mandatory. And so again, being fresh out of ideas, I was open-minded. He caught me at a good time. And he said, why don't you come to this meeting with me tonight and see what you think? So I did. I went down to like my first, I went to like a few early, AA meetings, like my first couple days out of treatment, and I wasn't really digging. It was a bunch of, like, at the time, no offense to anybody in here, but it was like a bunch of old dudes, and I didn't really like it. And I didn't want any parts of it. You weren't allowed to talk about, like, some of the stuff that I was into at the time. And I didn't want any parts of it. I didn't hear, like, a message that I really could resonate with. So I was closed off to it. Not this time, though. I went down to this meeting in Levittown on a Wednesday night. It's not there anymore, but it's called Precisely How. And this gentleman spoke, and he told what felt like my story. Not only did he talk about the bad parts of my story, but he talked about what exactly he did to recover. And I was all ears, and as much as I could muster with like probably 2 or 3 days sober at the time, I was all in. So I actually went to the same guy who took my brother through the steps, who was at that meeting, and I asked him to please take me through the steps. And Much like my previous sponsor, I thought we'd start out this exercise with me offloading a lot of my problems and him giving me some good advice to make me feel better. And I started with my piece in that, and I said, here's what I got going on. If you can believe this, my girlfriend left me, my job fired me, and my family's really upset with me. And come on, like, I have some messed up people around me, right? And he said, Bill, do me a favor, shut the F up. He said, it's not about you anymore. And I'm going to show you why. And I was like, I was pissed. This wasn't starting off how I had hoped it would. He sits me down and we start reading through. We read through Bill's story, and thank God for sponsorship, because the book has exactly what I needed to hear, and it has it all laid out and prescribed exactly as it takes place. It has a chapter entitled How It Works. It doesn't get much more clear than that yet. This book was written a long time ago, so absent a sponsor, I probably would have missed just about everything worthwhile in that book. And it seems simple, but really, you know, the beauty about sponsorship in here is that all you have to do is be able to read, sometimes not even that, and you just have to have had an experience with the 12 steps in order to sponsor someone. And that's exactly what this guy has. So he starts taking me through, and I read Bill's story, and I connect with a lot of it. And then we read, you know, we continue to go on, and we go through steps 1, 2, and 3 in that first session, which was completely crazy to me, because the way that I had learned previously was like a lot of sayings like easy does it, you know, don't bite off more than you can chew, all this stuff that basically indicated that like this recovery and the step process was a real slow burner. And when I said something to him, I said, well, aren't we going a little fast? And he said, yeah, you could look at it that way, but do you want to sit around feeling the way you feel now for a while, or do you want to get better now? And I was like, oh, no, I want to get better right now. And so when he put it like that, again, in simple terms that my simple mind can understand, I was ready to go through quickly and expeditiously, and we did. So we went through the first 3 steps that first night, and you know, we got on our knees and we prayed together the 3rd step prayer, which again was super weird. It was another one of those moments where I was like looking at him. I was like, what am I doing? But again, like when I look, you know, again, metaphorically over the other shoulder at what I had been doing, this seemed much better. So, why not? So then he had me write my 4th step. And I took a few weeks and, you know, I wrote down all my resentments, all my fears, you know, an inventory of my relationship conduct. And at the time, there was a lot of fault to be found in others. You know, I was mad at people. I was afraid of things. None of it was my fault. And I had been done wrong in a lot of my relationships with women. Come to find out, once again, you know, to my disappointment, not about me. It's about looking at my side of things, but it's not about just making me feel better and pointing out flaws in other people. We went through a 5th step. Maybe 2 weeks later, we sat down together, went through a 5th step, and I took my first hour. And that moment was the first time I had felt anything resembling peace in my mind, as long as I could remember. It was a pretty intense feeling, and it was the first experience I had that made me feel or believe that maybe this thing can work for me too. I had seen it work for other people, but again, keeping myself separate. My ego always wants to keep me separate. You know, it wants me to think that the steps are going to work for you guys, but not for me. It can't help me with what I got going on. And to this day, it'll still tell me stuff like that, but you know, the truth is that this thing works. I've been going through the steps again recently, because quite frankly, I've in this last run of sobriety started to follow a somewhat similar pattern. Not as much the career stuff, but I got tied up into a relationship, And I got myself in a relationship because nothing makes me feel good than when, as much as when, like, at least in sobriety, nothing makes me feel as good as when a pretty woman, like, loves me and adores me. Or at least, like, in my head, I think she does. And, you know, I got into a relationship, like, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, and this one rocked me. I let myself get really, really tied up in it, and it was the most important thing in my life by far. I'm currently making amends to my family because in sobriety, I'm ignoring phone calls from my family members who are worried about me because they see how crazy I'm getting over this relationship, and they're genuinely concerned. And I'm at her house, and all I care about is, like, just sex and affection. It's all I care about. It makes me feel so good that I don't need any of the other stuff. Even my friends who I love to death and I would do anything for, none of them felt as important. None of them could give me what this relationship at the time felt like it was giving me. So add on to that, in the middle of this relationship, find out that this girl gets pregnant. And at the time, I was really, really scared. I was really floored and didn't know what to do. And we went back and forth talking about having it, not having it, wasn't sure what to do. Long story short, she ends up going and getting an abortion without my knowledge. And that, as you might imagine, was kind of the beginning of the end. I still wanted to cling on. I still wanted to grasp on to this relationship for dear life. You know, in moments it felt really good. In moments it felt really bad. Either way, it sent my life into a spiral of unmanageability once again. And I pulled back from AA. I pulled back from the steps. I definitely pulled back from God. I worshiped nothing other than this relationship. And it drove me to the brink of insanity in sobriety again. Fortunately, before I picked up this time, I had some good people in my life intervene, combined with, finally, the book says something about being beaten into a state of reasonability or reasonableness. And finally, I was there. So I got back with my sponsor and started going through the steps again recently. And it took me a little bit. That relationship ended in November, and I sat around kind of like miserable and depressed for a few months and not knowing what to do. And I felt very much disconnected from everybody. Again, I was like, you know, my life looked really good. I have a job that I absolutely love. I have friends that I love. I have great relationships with my family. But again, like internally, I was really sick and really disconnected and felt embarrassed because I thought, like, all right, dude, like, you got, you know, 2.5 years. Not saying that that's a lot at all, because it's not. And everybody just has today. But I had thought that I should be, like, cured, or I had thought that I should be better than I felt at that moment in time. You know, I saw my brother at 2.5 years, and I always compare myself to him these days. Like, he was doing what he was supposed to be doing. And, you know, in addition to my sponsor, I talked to my brother right before I started going through the steps again. And he called me out, as he should have. And he said, you know, I called him one night a couple months ago, crying my eyes out again. It looked a lot like the last time. And I said, dude, I don't know what's wrong with me. Like, I haven't picked up, but I'm super depressed. I feel disconnected from everybody. I feel like everybody in my life is on their way out. I can't find happiness or joy in anything anymore. And he said, why don't you go through the steps again? And why don't you try doing it free of distractions? Because every time you go through the steps, you have something in your life that seems to take more importance than the steps, whether it's usually a job or a woman. And I said, yeah, maybe. And he was like, and then he got really confrontational with me. He said, dude, you don't even know who the hell you are, and you're 31 years old. And that was a bitter pill to swallow, but he was right. He was absolutely right. I don't. I didn't, I don't. I know a little bit, but that's about it. So a couple months ago, started going through the steps again with my sponsor, and we just recently went through a series of fifth steps. He had me do one with him and one with a woman, actually. And let me tell you, the one with him wasn't incredibly profound. It was pretty straightforward. I did feel a sense of relief afterwards, but nothing too profound. But then the next night, I did a fifth step with a woman. And for me, going through my sex conduct with a woman was a humbling experience, to say the least. It was intense. It was incredibly awkward. And so many times, I just wanted to run out the door because, frankly, like, I've done some stuff in sobriety that I'm not proud of at all. Some stuff that I'm really actually like truly embarrassed about. And to have to look a stranger, a woman, in her eyes and tell her like how I've treated women, and sex in general, was incredibly humbling. But exactly what I needed, exactly when I needed it. But an odd thing has happened in the last couple months. Since kind of flushing some of this stuff out and getting some of these blockages removed, because that's all these resentments, these fears, you know, all these things, they're all based in self and they all start and end with me. Since removing them, I've been a lot freer to actually check in and help out the people around me. I've found myself over the last couple months being a more present friend, a more present coworker, employee, son, and just a better version of myself, more caring and present to everyone around me. And fortunately, I guess unfortunately for them, but fortunately for me, I've had friends and coworkers and family members all go through stuff recently where they've needed my help. And thank God I've been free from the bondage of myself lately, enough so to the point where I can actually be present and be helpful. I heard in a meeting one time, a guy said, like, yeah, like the last place I would have thought to find this peace and serenity is inside myself, is through helping you. Because the truth is, like, you know, when I take from you and when I hurt you, I'm hurting myself because we're all connected. And I thought for sure I could buy my way to happiness or I could find it through all these external finite sources, you know, sex, money, a nice car, clothes, whatever, jobs. I thought for sure I could find it, but I've tried them all. They're never enough. They're never enough. And the last place I would have ever thought to find a source of everlasting happiness and contentness is in being of service to my fellow man, to my brothers and sisters, and being loving to those around me. But that's what I found in here. And that is the simple yet profound change that I found to take place in me from the 12 steps. So, yeah, I'm thankful to everybody here. I'm thankful to those that came before me and showed me something that I never, ever would have thought of myself. My thinking mind would have taken me to a really, really bad place, and it has, time and time again. But fortunately, you know, by the grace of God, I've been spared, and I've also been given a better path to walk. And freedom is possible, and I've experienced it numerous times, and I'm experiencing it today. And I feel grateful and blessed to be here. You know, I have a beautiful life. Again, I have a job that I love. I have relationships with people around me that really matter, like truly intimate relationships, intimate on a level where, like, I can be there for them, and we can discuss things no matter how awkward or uncomfortable they are. And my parents can count on me. My brother and sister can count on me. My friends can count on me. And I'm able to just show up and be a part of the stream of light today. And so I appreciate all you guys listening, and that's all I got. Thank you.